Welcome to episode 30 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
Kind of excited that it's episode 30. Not that that's a particularly special number in the grand scheme of things, but it is a nice round multiple of 10. And it's fun to have been recording these podcasts for 30 episodes. Looking forward to many more moving forward. As always, thank you to those who have signed in to listen. We do appreciate your support. Let's kick the podcast off by having a little bit of a roundup of news, Star Wars news. Some of it's specifically relevant to New Zealand. Most of it's accessible to New Zealand or will be down the line, but there's a few interesting bits and pieces we want to cover. We mentioned a podcast or two back that Droids is now available on Disney Plus. And although we haven't watched them all ourselves, we do want to just sort of recommend this as something that's worth checking out if you haven't seen them before. They are lightweight. They were made in the 80s. They are designed for kids, but there's some really fun aspects of these. And in some ways, I think they're a little bit more palatable or digestible than the Ewoks cartoons for the general audience. That's not to say that either are bad, but I think they do show their age a little bit. But there's a few interesting things about the Droids series that are worth mentioning that, if you're not familiar with, might prompt you to go and check them out. First of all, there are some really key characters that make appearances in the Droids episodes, like Boba Fett and IG-88. And also the basic story structure makes them quite easy to access and easy to watch in smaller chunks. There's 13 episodes. It's described on Disney Plus as being two seasons, but in reality it's 13 episodes, and what they're calling season two is in fact a single 48-minute special entitled The Great Heap. The thing that's not immediately clear, unless you look into it a little deeper, is the series story arcs fall into three cycles, and each of these cycles, which has basically the same number of episodes each, the droids usually run into a new set of characters and a new master. So you can watch a few episodes in series to get a little bit of a developed story arc out of it. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about the release on Disney Plus is that previous releases on VHS or DVD were all manipulated in one way or the other from the original broadcast episodes they had. The ends cut off, they were put in slightly different order, some have been recompiled into, you know, telemovies basically. So this is a first sort of representation as they were originally broadcast, but I do believe they have been remastered. These are nice quality versions available on Disney Plus. A completely different topic just to mention at this point, and this is something we're going to revisit in a little bit, but the X-Wing Miniatures Championship, that's the tabletop miniatures game, the national championship is taking place in Auckland next month, 24th of July. At Hobby Master in Penrose. Just between us, we've talked about the X-Wing Miniatures game. It's not something, we have to admit, it's an aspect of Star Wars hobbies that we haven't actually got into a lot, but we've talked about trying to get into it at some point. So we're going to talk about this a little bit closer to the actual championships and might even report on the championships if we get the opportunity. But it's something we'd actually like to explore ourselves a little bit.
I've always been quite intrigued by just about the variety of Star Wars tabletop games and miniature games, but they do require a little bit of investment and just time input to learn. I guess similar to sort of Dungeons and Dragons, there's a certain element of time to play these sort of campaign games on tables, and you need to sort of buy the sets and starting kits and expansion decks and things like that. But it is something I do really want to explore, and I think it'd be fun to see people play it at a sort of a competition level.
Yeah, so we know it's well liked by those who are fully into it. There's a little bit, as you say, a little bit of an investment to get into it, and I'm kind of curious to explore that a little bit more. I absolutely love what they do in terms of the detail on the miniatures. They're great collectibles in their own right. But anyway, like I said, the national championship taking place in Auckland, 24th of July. There is a Facebook page set up to it. There is a link below or on our website on YouTube, depending on where you're listening to this podcast from. There's still a number of tickets left. The space is left for competitors. So if you're into the game and you haven't been aware of that for one reason or another, do check it out and consider it. And we're probably going to talk about X-Wing miniatures in a little more detail down the line. In our news roundups and previous podcasts, we've given a little bit of a production roundup. I've had a bit of a conversation about where various Star Wars productions are up to. And one that we haven't been able to talk about because not a lot has been known is The Acolyte. There's a little bit of information out just in the last day that implies that filming for this is going to kick off in February next year in London. This has come from a couple of sources on the internet, one not the best source in the world, but one a slightly more solid source. But it is in conjunction with the showrunner Leslie Headland having been interviewed, where she talks about her connections with Star Wars and her approach to this. So I think it's a reasonable bit of information to take on board. I think it's reasonable that they are in fact going to start production in a number of months in February. So the interesting aspects about this is that it's likely to be done in London. The series will likely use the volume that's been set up at Pinewood Studios. Following the success of the use of the volume technology in Los Angeles for the first two seasons of The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett, the volume in Pinewood in London is currently being used by Peyton Reed, who directed an episode of The Mandalorian, but is currently using it to film the Marvel movie Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. And just a reminder for those that may have forgotten, I had to go back and remind myself of the detail, was the series of The Acolyte has been described as a mystery thriller, so that's a little bit of a deviation from other styles within the Star Wars media landscape. They will take the audience into a galaxy of the shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era.
At this point, we don't know whether this series will keep within that sort of old school idea of the Sith rule of two. We don't know whether that will sort of still be in place for this story. And so this acolyte is sort of like an apprentice to the established Sith Lord. Because the High Republic era is about 200 years before Palpatine, it would be somebody else, somebody that we wouldn't know, or whether they're going to sort of quietly push the rule of two away and have a, like, more of a sort of a collection of Sith all sort of battling for power. And we've got somebody sort of a central sort of Sith aligned or dark side character to follow with this series. So I'm really keen to see. I like the old Sith lore, but I don't mind them kind of changing things up a little bit.
Well, I've got a couple of thoughts on that. The title The Acolyte implies a singular acolyte. And just to state the obvious, the word acolyte means basically Sith Padawan. It's the Sith version of a Padawan, so a Sith apprentice. And The Acolyte implies a singular. In terms of lore and canon, it's always kind of, it never really sat well with me, the rule of two, as being some sort of overarching rule that has to be abided by across the entire galaxy. That it makes sense that in some circumstances or for some Sith that they might dictate a law of two, but what we've just seen in The Mandalorian is that there are different sets of Mandalorians who have different interpretations of how they should behave. Take your helmet off, never take your helmet off sort of deal. So there could well be different interpretations of the rule of two. It might be just appearing. It might just mean that the single Sith Lord only takes on a single apprentice at a point in time, not that there's only ever one Sith Lord.
I like the idea that it's something that Sidious subscribes to, because as we know that he kind of killed his master, I think he likes the idea of him being in complete control so that there isn't like multiple Sith all sort of vying for his throne, that he is the master and there's only sort of one below him, because it's easier to keep an eye on one person trying to usurp you. But that is to say, he does utilize other Dark Force users like Asajj Ventress. And obviously in the animated series, we see the Inquisitors, like the Second Sister and Seven Sister and the Grand Inquisitor and things like that. So it's the rule of two does kind of restrict storytelling a little bit. And we've seen Lucasfilm try to sort of sidestep that a little bit.
Technical loopholes, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it made sense in terms of the prequel trilogy, because the there hadn't been a powerful Sith Lord for quite some time, so it made sense in those terms. But yeah, obviously there's been expansion around that based on technical loopholes.
I like the idea that it's almost like a myth, like the Jedi believe it. So it's something that the Sith kind of put out there and they lay low and they kind of, you know, keep perpetuating that myth so that the Jedi are just like, oh yeah, you know, there's only like two at any one time and there hasn't been one for ages, so we don't need to worry about them so much. So yeah, but anyway, I'm super excited to get some little bit more sort of concrete information about when this is going to be coming out.
Yeah, it's just a tease. It's not rock solid, but it's entirely plausible. And I think it's expected at this point that we're going to start hearing about the remaining Star Wars titles that we know are going to go into production. The other things we know about The Acolyte, we're expecting an 8-episode series from it that starts production in early 2022. Then we're probably not going to see it until early 2023, but that's fine. We've got other material along the way. And once something starts production, we will have more to talk about and a little bit more of a feel about where it's going to go. So that leaves a number of titles that we know are going to exist that we haven't got much information at all about. We're still waiting to hear something about the Lando series, A Droid Story. We know very little about Taika Waititi's project, other than that he's been busy on a number of other projects, so it's not quite clear where that's going to fit into his timelines. And even Ahsoka was still a little unclear on the timelines of. We do know how it relates to the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian, but we don't know when we're going to actually see material from that. And of course, Rangers of the New Republic. Well, there's two sides, two interpretations as to whether or not that's going to actually go ahead or not. Not going to put much stock into that until we get something a little more solid, because even if changes are made, that may very well still go ahead.
I'm excited about all of these sort of announced series, and even if they sort of evolve and change, I'm still fine with that. I think there's a variety of stories and storytellers within sort of the greater Lucasfilm sort of family. And even the ones I don't know that much about, I'm just like, once The Mandalorian kind of blew me away with the storyline, and it was a show that we didn't really know much about going into it, I think I'm going to sort of welcome all the Star Wars stories with open arms and sort of really just enjoy them for what they are, you know, just more Star Wars. Obviously, it would have been fun to have the one movie a year like they originally promised or aspired to, but this pivot to Disney Plus has meant that we aren't going years without Star Wars content. Like, some of the major theatrical releases have been delayed for multiple years because of the theaters closing, and this pivot to working on the volume and giving us segmented series, I think, is fun, and sum total we do end up getting more hours of Star Wars with a series rather than with a full movie. But saying all that, I am still longing for the day we can go and see a Star Wars movie on the big screen again. It's where Star Wars always should have a home. I think I would feel sad if they only ever did Star Wars stories on Disney Plus. Not that that's not a bad thing, but there's something to be said for seeing Star Wars on a big screen. And I do look forward to like the Rogue Squadron movie and any of the others that have been teased or sort of formally announced over the past year. So it's all good.
Yep, those good points. It will be interesting to see Star Wars on the big screen again down the line. All right, let's change tack a little bit. Let's talk about Palmerston North Armageddon Expo, which is coming up in August. Over the past week, the Armageddon Expo organisers have announced all of the virtual guests that are going to be making an appearance at that expo. And there are a couple of Star Wars celebrities in the list. We want to talk about Alan Tudyk and Timothy Omenson. So Alan Tudyk, well known as K2SO in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. He's previously been announced for an Armageddon Expo, Auckland Armageddon in 2018, but was unfortunately not able to attend, so it is nice that we are actually going to see him. He played K2SO in Rogue One, as I just mentioned, but he has also previously been announced as reprising that role for the Andor series. I'll just touch on that briefly to remind you of what we actually know about that. Filming for Andor began in late October/November of 2020 in London. But prior to that, when the story was first announced in about April 2019, Alan Tudyk was amongst the announcements as to be reprising his role of K2SO for the series. But it was later that Alan Tudyk himself confirmed he was no longer going to be appearing in the series' first season due to Tony Gilroy's changes to the story timelines, but that he could very well appear in potential future seasons. Now, I think that's interesting for a couple of reasons, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It implies that Andor is going to have more than one season. Two seasons is fine with me as a minimum. But I also like the idea that it solidly means that we're going to see the first encounter between Cassian Andor and K2SO, which I think is potentially very interesting. It would be very fun to see, because we know that K2SO exists in his current state of personality because he's been reprogrammed. So we're going to see K2SO in his standard default Imperial mode before we see that Rogue One variation.
I do just hope that that means that the showrunners have a vision for a longer projected storyline, and they have a more concrete idea about when they want to have that introduction, and so that perhaps bodes well for future seasons. I think Cassian's story is fascinating, and I really want to see more of that sort of underground rebellion era before the events of A New Hope. So I'm really crossing my fingers hard that this means that things are looking positive for more than one season.
Yeah, so just to speak a little bit more about the Andor series before we move on to talk about Timothy Amundsen as well, just to remind you that filming of Andor has been going on, like I just said, and is due to wrap up soon. I believe it's due to wrap up in July, so next month. They've been using the volume at Pinewood. They've also been doing a lot of location shootings. We've talked about this in previous podcasts. They've been working in quarries, beachfront promenades, Black Park, which is a foresty bush-type area, and also an abandoned refinery. So this tells us a little bit about what to expect from Andor, and we have talked about this before, and how it may differ from The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, with these quite distinct physical locations, which I find very interesting. But with filming expected to wrap next month, we may see some official material from this coming out for the end of the year. So just to reiterate, Alan Tudyk appearing at Palmerston North Armageddon. We don't know whether it's going to be on the Saturday or the Sunday yet. That information will be coming out from the Armageddon Expo organisers down the line. Also appearing virtually at Palmerston North Armageddon is Timothy Amundsen. He's a fairly well-known actor in his own right, appearing on shows like Supernatural and Galavant. But in the Star Wars universe, he is known for his voice work in games, Star Wars video games. We know him well from, and this won't surprise our regular listeners to hear this, from Star Wars The Old Republic, where he plays the first companion that the Republic trooper gets, Arik Jorgen. So I enjoy Star Wars voice actors for a number of reasons, but he is particularly significant because if you play the trooper storyline, you end up hearing his voice on a pretty solid basis. You know, we play Star Wars The Old Republic nearly daily. It's one of our ways of getting Star Wars activities and hobbies into our life on a daily basis. And I've just been going through one of my new trooper characters recently, actually, and you hear Arik Jorgen, a.k.a. Timothy Amundsen, talking, you know, very frequently.
There are a variety of companions you get in the game for each character class, but there are ones that really do stand out as more primary because of their role in your class story and how early on in the game you get them. And because Arik Jorgen is a character you get very early on, and he is involved with some of the in-game storyline as well, he feels like a really sort of central character, yeah. Particularly if you are a player that plays a trooper character. It feels like a very central character. And he is also a romanceable character if you play a female trooper as well. So there is a romance storyline that you can do there as well. So it feels like he is such a central part of that storyline.
Yeah, that's a good point. So for those not familiar with the game, the first companion each character, and there's 8 character classes in the game, gets actually has a distinct companion story arc separate from the character story arc that you play, where you visit a number of planets. But in addition to that, Arik Jorgen actually in some of the expansions has some key roles as well. So the bottom line is Arik Jorgen has a very significant role in Star Wars The Old Republic for the trooper character, but other characters as well. And Timothy Amundsen's voice is very distinct and recognizable, and he makes this character quite popular amongst fans of the game. So it's kind of fun that he's going to be making an appearance at Armageddon Expo in New Zealand. He's also done voices for a number of other Star Wars video games, and it's worth just taking a quick look at those because it does mean you may have come across him yourself in one form or another. He was in the 2005 version of Star Wars Battlefront 2, done some work going right back to Knights of the Old Republic 2, and in Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike, he actually voiced a number of characters, including Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, it's fun looking back at some of the Star Wars voice actors and coming across just how many times you would have actually come across them before. It's often surprising, but then not surprising when you see voice actors and you're like, oh my gosh, I've played all these video games and I've probably heard their voices numerous times before coming across them in the more modern ones like Star Wars The Old Republic. Obviously, Timothy Amundsen is not involved in any of the major live-action or animated Star Wars series. His involvement in the Star Wars galaxy is with the video games. But if you are a fan of the video games, it's still fun to see these actors at conventions, even if they don't necessarily speak about their involvement in any Star Wars projects. It's just neat to support them as being a contributor to the Star Wars stories that we love.
Okay, let's have a little bit of a chat about product announcements and store reports that are relevant to Kiwis. And then we'll go on to talk about the last week's episode of The Bad Batch. In product announcements and store reports, we saw information released about a 6-inch Black Series Power of the Force 2 cardback line. Three figures, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Greedo, all in their original trilogy, Star Wars A New Hope costumes. So this is another example of 6-inch versions of previously released cardbacks. Now, this is the first time I've seen Power of the Force 2 cardbacks in this scaled up version.
These ones are obviously have this sort of infamy with collectors due to the sculpts that we used, the original sort of 3¼-inch figures at the time. But for me, they were amongst the easiest to find figures when I started collecting in the prequel era. These were slightly older, not so sought after by collectors that had been, you know, collecting since the vintage era. So they were ones that I was easily able to find. So I bulked out my early Star Wars collection because that was the only way for me to be able to get original trilogy characters for my action figure collectors. So while the figures themselves and their sculpting might, you know, may not be so sort of nostalgic for some people, the backing cards, I think, are fun because they represent that era when I was just absolutely trying to track down everything I could. And most of my action figures were either the Episode 2 Blue Saga, the Phantom Menace cards, or the Power of the Force 2 figures. So that's quite nostalgic for me to see these ones reissued.
Yeah, without a doubt, the first wave and even second wave of Power of the Force 2 figures were quite quirky. With Kenner, as they were still known back then, before that we fully moved to the Hasbro brand, they were trying to, there were other figures that were working for them that had sort of that muscular approach, and they thought it might translate to Star Wars. It didn't, but either way, I remember strongly, vividly, the first learning that Kenner was going to be doing new action figures in the Power of the Force 2 line. And I actually bought mine, the first wave, through before they hit local retailers, local department stores. I bought them through what was then Mark 1 Comics in Auckland, and got them quite early and bought the whole wave, probably at inflated prices, but they were imported specifically. It was interesting times. Obviously, the line's come a long way since then. Now, the store report announcements. We only just recently learned that the Black Series 6-inch line would be expanded to include a couple more Bad Batch characters, Captain Rex in his Bracca getup, so with an extra poncho, a few new sculpted additional details and features, and also an Imperial version of Crosshair. So this is his black or very dark grey, depending on how you want to see it, armor with the cool helmet and the green visor, rather than his original Bad Batch armor. And also under the Clone Wars banner, so with Clone Wars coloring on the card rather than Bad Batch coloring on the card, a clone trooper from the 212th Battalion. Now, EB Games has two of these, the two Bad Batch characters, Rex and Crosshair, available for pre-order at $54 each, but we haven't seen any evidence of the 212th Battalion clone trooper being available in New Zealand just yet. Speaking of Bad Batch, we also reported on SWNZ about the Bad Batch fig pins available for $24 from a number of retailers, including Mighty Ape. Fig pins are about 3-4-inch sized metallic pins that come with a display case and a few gamification features with an accompanying app. But these are quite cool, and you can collect the whole series of Bad Batch figures if you're really getting into the Bad Batch series and characters. And finally, in store reports, there is a new wave of original trilogy, the Vintage Collection 3.75-inch figures available at Mighty Ape. A few days back, these became available, a Hoth version of Luke Skywalker, an Endor version of Han Solo, a Return of the Jedi version of Admiral Ackbar, and a Return of the Jedi version of the Royal Guard, who had some expanded universe armor on underneath the standard armor. Since the time those were first released, I think the Royal Guard may have sold out. We may or may not see them again down the line. So if you do want any others from the wave, jump on in and get those, because they may show up at other retailers, but we don't have evidence of that just yet. Those figures are $28 each from Mighty Ape. Okay, the Bad Batch Episode 8, entitled Reunion. We're going to talk a little bit about Cad Bane in a moment. This episode obviously concluded with the reappearance of Cad Bane, and that was, you know, quite a well-kept secret, relatively well-kept secret. And obviously it's not a spoiler now that we're a week past it, but it was very interesting to see that at the time. So overall, this episode, we saw the Bad Batch still on location, on the Bracca location, the Starship Junkyard, you know, considering how to make money out of their current situation, what they could salvage and sell. But while they were in the process of doing that, Crosshair and backup clone troopers made an appearance, having been told of Bad Batch's location by the Scrapper Guild. And we see a little bit of a cat and mouse game as Crosshair tries to, you know, chase down and preempt the movements of Bad Batch. When we were talking about this earlier between ourselves, you know, I think this is an episode that can be described as not having a whole lot of character development. It was more of a episode about things happening, of events happening. So we see, you know, Crosshair re-encountering, hence the title Reunion, re-encountering the Bad Batch. And we learn that the Kaminoans have actually sent an additional bounty hunter out to try and recapture Omega at the time that conversation happens. We don't know who the bounty hunter is in fact going to be. By the end of the episode, we see the confrontation between Hunter and Cad Bane. Hunter's trying to protect Omega. Unfortunately, he fails to do so, and Omega is in fact captured, and Hunter is injured at the time, but not, you know, his armor takes most of the brunt of the blaster bolt, so he's not permanently injured, or seems that he's going to make a reasonable recovery, but, you know, necessary for the storyline that he's incapacitated, at least briefly. It's particularly interesting to see Cad Bane again, I think. The last time we saw Cad Bane was, in fact, way back in Season 4 of The Clone Wars. This is the last time we saw him on screen, where he was arrested for kidnapping or attempting to kidnap Palpatine. We went back and watched those episodes just to remind ourselves, and that's something that's worth considering doing. It was kind of fun to go back and watch some of the older Clone Wars content for a specific reason. There was 4 episodes that are particularly relevant, and if you want to go do it, it's kind of fun to do so. Jump over to episodes 15 to 18, entitled Deception, concluding in the episode entitled Crisis on Naboo of Season 4 of The Clone Wars. That was quite a fun story arc in its own right. The first episode of that story arc is entitled Deception, where you might remember Obi-Wan fakes his death and takes on the disguise of Rako Hardeen. And a number of things come out of that episode, including demonstrating a little bit of growing tension between Obi-Wan and Anakin. So like I say, it's kind of worth going back and checking out its own right, but it also shows a lot about Cad Bane and where he's at, and, you know, where he fits into the picture in terms of bounty hunters and bounty hunter hierarchy and so forth.
Yeah, it was fun to sort of refresh on his character. I always remember him being quite a sinister character. He certainly isn't afraid to do whatever it takes. A lot of bounty hunters have a somewhat sort of, I don't know, almost a reasonable side, but he just comes across as very ruthless, not almost to the point of evil, and he's very suspicious. So I think it was a really fun use of to bring him back in. I was kind of curious to see when Fennec Shand was unable to capture Omega, what the Kaminoans would do. Yeah. And in this one, they reference, you know, getting another bounty hunter. And I was like, okay, is this going to be like an original character? Is it going to be somebody that we might not be anticipating? So it was kind of a surprise. And I know Cad Bane is quite a fan favorite character. So I think this was really fun because we never see his demise in the animated series. I don't think he was ever given like an ending in the books or comics. So it's a fun way of sort of pulling in somebody that we know must be still running around out there.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting lore around him. Like I say, Season 4 of The Clone Wars was when we last saw him in an actual, you know, visual story. He's been referenced once or two times that kind of imply what he's been doing since that time, but it is quite a long stretch of time. In 2017 at the Celebration, in Celebration Orlando, at a panel called Animated Origins and Unexpected Fates, they did show some unfinished animatics that were originally worked up for Season 7 but were never completed. That did show a standoff, a duel between Boba Fett and Cad Bane, where after a classic Western style standoff and, you know, gunfight, they both hit, they both struck. Boba Fett's hit in the helmet, and the characteristic dent in his helmet is you know, created as a consequence of that, and we don't know if Cad Bane is mortally injured or any such thing. Some people like to think that that actually does take place in the lore, but it's not finished and it's probably not likely to be canonized as such. And, you know, just to fill out that storyline, if you accept that that event did take place, it's kind of interesting because it's implied that Boba Fett actually learns most of his bounty hunting skills from Cad Bane, so there is a secondary implication that somewhere along the line there is a falling out between Cad Bane and Boba Fett before Boba Fett gets older and actually has this face-off with Cad Bane. But as I say, not truly canonized, but an interesting thing to consider as a possibility. So in terms of canon, though, quite a long stretch between Season 4 of The Clone Wars and his reappearance here in The Bad Batch, and obviously we're going to see more of him over the next few episodes. A few other things that were kind of interesting from that episode. I do like the fact that they stayed in one place for just a little bit and let that story arc develop in terms of what they were doing on Bracken and or what they could do. The interaction between Bad Batch and Crosshair had a few really kind of interesting bits and pieces. Obviously, Crosshair is... You know, Omega pointed out to Crosshair that he wasn't in control of his actions. That didn't seem to... Although he's got his helmet on, we couldn't really read his emotions. That didn't really seem to phase Crosshair at all. He's quite brutal in his pursuit of Bad Batch and even Omega, looking to basically execute them.
Yeah. His plan to basically trap them in the giant Jedi Cruiser ion engine and then turn it on is a pretty brutal way to kill people that were before, you know, at the start of the series, these guys were like brothers. I mean, because they are. But like a really tight-knit family unit to the point where we see him trying to obliterate them, including Omega, who is a child, really.
Yeah.
So we see just how sort of corrupted his mind has become by the inhibitor chip. We don't know to what extent he would, like, whether he was just always of the mindset that he was a good soldier who follows orders and the inhibitor chips just really ramped that up, and whether if they were able to take it out, whether he would revert completely, or whether he has really, as we would say, crossed over to the dark side and is fully on the Empire's side with their sort of mindset. And obviously the Kaminoans do not want Omega killed, even though the Empire just wants them gone and eliminated. So obviously they had to sort of intervene and send somebody in there. It was interesting. It's kind of interesting seeing clone troopers behaving like stormtroopers alongside other clone troopers. You know, we see Cad Bane basically eliminate a whole bunch of what are essentially stormtroopers now, but they still look like clone troopers. And we saw Omega firing her bow very confidently, and she helps out placing the bombs and things like that. But then, of course, we have... It kind of reminded me of The Mandalorian, the tragedy, where they're doing everything that they can to stop Omega being taken, in the same way that the Mandalorian was trying to protect Baby Yoda, but in the end, the other party prevails and the person in question is kidnapped. So we don't really know completely what the Kaminoans want to do. There does seem to be a certain amount of care for her. This isn't quite like the Empire trying to steal Grogu, that they're not going to... Like, they might be trying to, like, extract DNA.
I don't think they see her as fully expendable at this point.
No, I don't think they... If they wanted just her DNA, then her being killed by the Empire wouldn't be completely at odds with their plans. They seem to want her alive. And there does seem to be a certain amount of care, particularly from the female Kaminoan. But I thought it was interesting at the end, we see the sort of pitting of Hunter and Crosshair directly, because they are kind of now sort of leaders of opposite factions.
Yeah.
And we see Crosshair seemingly get the upper hand and has them captured. And then, of course, blowing the end funnel off the engine means that when the engines fire, it's no longer funneled and it catches Crosshair and Stormtroopers/Clone Troopers in its sort of wake. And we see Crosshair get fairly injured at the end of this in his burns.
That's interesting, because not only did he fail, being badly injured is going to affect his motivation to attacking, executing Bad Batch, I think.
And I think it might also affect, because we're seeing the sort of backwards and forwards between the Kaminoans and the Empire about whether it's better to use clones or recruits, if we see what is supposed to be one of the most efficient clones fail at his task yet again to eliminate the Bad Batch, what does that bode for Crosshair? Is he going to be kicked to the curb by the Empire because he's not really a functioning clone if he's wounded and not, you know, completing his missions? So that's going to be an interesting complication for him down the line. I'm curious to see where that's going to affect his storyline, and obviously what's going to happen now that Omega seems to be on her way back to the Kaminoans. Is the Bad Batch going to be able to intercept Cad Bane and Omega before they get back to Kamino? Are they going to have to return to their homeworld and have a bit of a conflict there?
Yeah, well, they don't seem too keen on going back to Kamino, they're probably going to have to.
So, yeah, like we said, not a lot of character development, a little bit more, I think, for maybe Crosshair, just because of what's happened to him. He's going to have to deal with that. That might be not emotionally, but it is going to change his storyline.
So not character development, but definitely story development. The intersection of Bad Batches and Crosshair's story arcs, and also the reintroduction of Cad Bane into the mix, and obviously the capture of Omega. So, yeah, very key events in terms of the story that's going to make for some interesting few episodes over the next little bit. This was episode 8. I believe there's about 6 episodes left. We know the titles for 14 episodes in total. There has been reference to 16 episodes being produced, but it is known that the first episode was in fact made up of 3 production titles. So yeah, I'm expecting about 6 episodes left to wrap up, you know, this story development. And a mid-season trailer did just come out that gave us some hints about what we're going to see next. And it's interesting that they're going back to places like Naboo, which seems quite separate from what we've seen so far. So, yeah, there's going to be some significant evolution and progression of the story that might not be immediately evident.
Yeah, the events in this one almost feel like they're being drawn into a direct conflict with the Empire and the Kaminoans and how Omega plays into that dynamic. But with the trailer showing other places, it'll be interesting. It's like, okay, so this isn't, we're not building up to the big War on Mandalore type Clone Wars finale ending. We're going to get something different here. So I'm excited.
Okay, next episode coming up later on this evening, and we'll talk about it next week. But on that note, that's about it for today's installment. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Friday. And don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.